KBOOT Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Gaining Ground, a feature-length documentary film by Elaine Velasquez and Barbara Bernstein on Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st at Cinema 21 in Portland. Gaining Ground tells the stories of farmers making extraordinary changes in their farming practice so they can feed their local communities sustainably grown produce and grains. The documentary interweaves experiences of urban farmer activists, large farms in transition, and small family farmers. Again, that's Gaining Ground, Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st, at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, September 28, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Well, as we know now, Shell is pulling up stakes, decamping, and moving on. Lord knows where they're going next. Got a few good ideas, but... The evil never sleeps, does it? And that means the pressure has to stay on. Though this definitely is cause for celebration. They sunk a lot of money into it, and now they have realized that this was unfortunately not a decision based on environmental responsibility or future-oriented thinking. It was based solely on short-term profit, as always. We're listening now again to a little bit more music from Goodshiel Aguirre and Mignon Gailey. They have played beautiful flute drum music at the Buffalo Field Campaign event, and we like having them back on the show whenever we possibly can. It sets the stage for what comes after. So on that note, our guest today is Mary Nichols. She is one of the directors of the Arctic Campaign with Greenpeace, and she'll be joining us in just a moment. Tomorrow is Pink Out Day, and it's a time to stand up in solidarity on behalf of Planned Parenthood, which is under attack from the extreme right-wing conservatives, who seem to be perhaps not a majority, but certainly they have the loud screaming voices of the mob, and they're drowning out compassion, intelligence, and for that matter, the law, though it's unlikely that they will have their way. Nonetheless, they can certainly know how to throw a wrench in the works. And we can throw one back, catch the wrench and throw it right back into their works. One in five American women has received care at Planned Parenthood Center. There are extremists who want to prevent women from having basic care, basic reproductive care. Though Lord knows, once somebody squirts out a baby, they rush to defend the right of that baby to live. So there you go. We were fortunate enough at the Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival to hear the words from Sweetwater Nanak, and she, of course, is Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian, director of Idle No More, and had a great deal to say about Alaska and the fragile environment, and why protecting it is not simply protecting habitat, it's not protecting land. White people forget that land and people and creatures are all one. And here's this authority from this from Pendleton. Just I have to bring this to you. Authorities say a horse believed to have been killed by wolves in rural Wallowa County was actually gored by bull elk. Okay, great. So let's all run out and shoot elk. This is terrific. It's a good thing they found out that this was done by an elk, because otherwise the rural populace would have got themselves armed to the teeth and headed out into the wild to slaughter all the wolves that they could possibly find. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife says that the horse was found dead on September 18th, had wounds matching the size and space of elk antlers. How in the hell can you mistake an elk attack from a wolf attack? I thought these people were supposed to know nature, know their environment out there in eastern Oregon. And chanting no tar sands on stolen native lands, First Nations women disrupted and shut down in Montreal public hearing on the controversial Energy East pipeline. The latest in a resistance campaign against this massive project that was proposed by the Alberta-based TransCanada Corporation, in other words, Keystone XL. We will have Mary Nicol on the line in just a moment. Mary? Good morning.
Good morning,
and welcome to KBOO.
Thanks.
Hard to hear you. Maybe speak up a little bit so we could get your voice out to our listeners. Welcome back.
Sure.
You've been on the show before. We're delighted to welcome you back, and especially with today's news. This is a huge announcement. Shell spent upward of, $7 billion on Arctic offshore exploration. I'd love to know what it was that actually triggered the decision. Do you at Greenpeace have any inkling of what Shell found that dissuaded them? Because, you know, Lord knows it wasn't concern for the environment, though I want to believe, and I do believe, that activism all up and down the West Coast played a significant role, drawing public attention to the despoiling of this fragile habitat. So how is Greenpeace viewing the decision?
Yeah, thanks. So this is just a huge victory for activists across the Pacific Northwest who came out to the park in Portland or got in a kayak in Seattle. Because as we've seen in the initial press that's come out around this, you know, there are a couple of reasons that Shell is stating publicly for the reason why they decided to pull out of the project. And one is definitely all of the public outcry that they've been hearing and the impact that public outcry had on the regulatory environment here in the U.S. So it's a great victory for the climate movement and for folks who've been, you know, fighting for a livable planet. And it's just such an exciting day. I didn't think we'd see it this soon.
It is extraordinary. Have you any idea where Shell might be? Because they obviously have something up their sleeve. Where do you figure they're heading next?
Yeah, it's a little too soon to tell. You know, this is, they were putting their reputation on the line with this project. But they're acquiring another oil company, the BG Group, recently. And so, it's the writing's on the wall for a lot of these oil companies that they need to rethink their business model and how they go about their business. And so, it's an exciting opportunity because, you know, they can either, you know, continue to go after the dirtiest and most dangerous fuels on the planet and be met with protests across the globe from the climate movement, or they can, you know, start to recognize what's happening, where people are really waking up to the fact that climate change is here and now, and take action, and, you know, start to transition into putting resources into renewable energy and those sorts of things. It's, you know, that one of the sad, there's a lot of exciting things about it, but one of the sad things is that Shell dumped $7 billion into this project. And from the outset, their investors, everyone, environmentalists were telling them this is not a good investment. This is not where you should be, you know, betting that we'll be in 20 years with our energy portfolio. So I just, you know, I wonder what could that $7 billion have gone to?
Yeah, it's something that certainly worth considering, speculating on. And the amounts of money that go into projects like this, like the Keystone XL, which looks like that's very likely down the tubes, is is astonishing in the amount of good that it actually could do. Leaving fossil fuels in the ground, more and more, I think that organizations like Greenpeace, like so many others all around the world, leaving fossil fuels in the ground should be the call that we focus on. And it's good that we could stop pipelines. It's good to stop Shell from drilling. But leaving it in the ground is the only way to forward if we expect to have a planet at all. On the other hand, the rats will certainly be enjoying what we leave to them. That perhaps we should think of the rats as future generations to start considering what they're going to do with it. Probably not drive around in little cars. So moving ahead, I wanted to ask you just briefly before we let you go about Greenpeace's further plans. Is this truly over, or can we expect something else from Shell?
Yeah. So you know, this is certainly a huge victory on the path to saving the Arctic, but it doesn't mean that the Arctic is off limits. You know, certainly companies like Shell are looking to profit off the melting ice up there and try to get under the ice to the resources that are now available due to climate change. And so what we're working to do is to make sure that President Obama, as he continues to take further and further action to beef up his climate legacy, also includes protecting the Arctic in there and takes any future leases for the Arctic Ocean drilling off the table in his last few months here as president.
Are we worried too, because looming in the wings, Russia and Canada and, you know, other nations definitely have an eye on the Arctic, and they have no compunctions whatsoever, and the populace that is generally beyond apathetic when it comes to these sorts of things. So it's a huge victory, but again, it's not over. I want to thank you so much for joining us. We've been speaking with Mary Nicol with Greenpeace this morning about Shell, Royal Dutch Shell's decision to pull out of their Arctic adventure and pack it up and go home. I have a couple of other notes on privatizing water. It's encouraged, as many know, by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Shame, shame, shame. These are institutions, in any case, that do nothing but profit off the misery of the disenfranchised. They are making public to private takeovers a condition of lending. As a result, the early 1990s saw a rush of cities and countries around the world signing over their nation's water resources to private companies. And it's argued by industry and investors that putting water in private hands translates into improvements in efficiency and service quality. Well, we know that's not true. Everything that's ever been privatized has been a colossal failure. It has made a few people very, very wealthy. Now, this is part and parcel of the effort to sell out the U.S. Postal Service, which has been under attack for a while now. Of course, private companies such as UPS and others would love to get their hands on that market. And I have to say, from my own experience as a rural person, the little local post office is a meeting place for people. Elderly people get their medicines there. Some farmers, you can order chicks, and you walk into the post office and hear chicks peeping way in the back with the parcels. This is all the creeping corporatization of every aspect of our lives. And it starts, of course, with the government, which has been totally privatized for quite a while. Corporations are calling the shots, and the Koch brothers, indeed, one of the biggest players on that field. You're going to be hearing a lot about the Koch brothers in just a few minutes, a few seconds, actually, on Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein. And bear in mind that they are key players in the privatization of everything. But the problems with water privatization often begin to occur soon after the initial wave of enthusiasm. Moving right along, let's see. There has been an issue too with the Yaqui water rights defender. After a year of false imprisonment, Yaqui water rights defender Mario Luna was released from prison. Earlier, a judge ordered the release of Mario. Tribal secretary of Ikam Yaqui and, of course, Mexico refused, but now he's been released. This has been Air Cascadia for Monday, September 28th, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Religion for Life, and this week is the third of my three-part series on clergy who have left the ministry, and in some cases, left God. My guest this week is former Seventh-day Adventist minister Ryan Bell, who took a year off from God and then blogged about it, a year without God. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
He was born a prophet to a pawn on a Christmas day when the New York Times said God is dead.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Port Orford's Sustainable Seafood, Oregon's community-supported fishery, delivering monthly shares of line-caught seafood direct from the small fishing town of Port Orford to seafood-loving communities throughout Portland and the Willamette Valley. Details at posustainableseafood.com and at 541-671-0704.
This KBOO program is